In 1978, over a million people went to the Los Angeles County Museum to see King Tut and the artifacts from his tomb. Now, some of the same artifacts are back at the Los Angeles County Museum, and over 300,000 tickets have been purchased for the show before opening day, which was 10 days ago. One group of scientists produced a reconstructed figure of King Tut as an African man in 2002. At the Los Angeles County Museum, they're showing a newer reconstructed bust, which many say depict King Tut as white. The newly constructed bust appeared on the cover of National Geographic, who is also one of the organizers of the current King Tut tour. Protesters greeted the exhibit's opening, publicly arguing the case for King Tut's African origins. Is LeGrand Clegg, the Compton city attorney. He joins us on the line. Welcome to Uprising.
Thank you very much.
Right now, LeGrand, I see that there was a protest out there, people carrying signs, a lot of outrage. Why is this important, that the portrayal of King Tut as white?
Well, it's important to African-American people and Africans in general because it's a golden opportunity to focus for once on something positive about the continent of Africa, to show the magnificence and grandeur of this great civilization, and also to convey to the world that Egypt was one of three great Nilotic civilizations, one being Nubia, the other Kemet, Egypt, and the other Kush. But also, our children, black children, need to recognize that the ancient Egyptians were part of the great African heritage. This was King Tut was a little boy who ruled a great nation at the time, and children could relate to something like that. So in a country and a world where the norm is to defame and besmirch the continent of Africa and people of African descent, when you have an exhibit like this, it's important to showcase the greatness of people of African descent.
Right now, what do you say to those who have said, well, we now have scientific evidence, scientific proof of what King Tut looked like, and that the new bust reflects what has been found scientifically? What is your comeback to that?
My comeback would be this. We have done an investigation of the individuals who have been involved, the scientific teams involved with the reconstruction of the bust. And there were three, one from France, another from the United States, and another from Egypt. And it is our understanding that, and let me say this too to clarify matters, the one, if I believe it's correct, the one from France is the one that is depicted as a modern person with eyes and ears, I mean, with features that are distinguished. And he looks like Boy George, by the way, and this was stated on Nightline. Nightline, many others have said the same thing. But it appears that many of the scientists who created this monstrosity are not in agreement as to what it really would look like. And the choice of a color was certainly subjective. That's number one. Even the team that produced these three constructions, one of which is the Boy George imposter bust. Secondly, I would say that the team of scientists whom you mentioned earlier from New Zealand and Britain produced a reconstruction that showed him as Negroid. Third and most important from the perspective that we're coming from is that William M. Flinders Petrie, the father of modern Egyptology, way back in the 1890s, spoke specifically to this dynasty, the 17th and 18th dynasties. King Tut was born into the 18th dynasty, and the precursor dynasty, the 17th dynasty, was the same family. The only reason that there's a distinction is that his great-great-great-grandfather Amos ousted the Western Asians who had temporarily conquered Egypt, and therefore, by ousting them, formed the 18th dynasty, but it's the same genetic stream. Anyway, Petrie stated that this family was from Nubia. James Harris and Kent Weeks, the foremost authorities on mummies, wrote a book called X-Raying the Pharaohs back in the 70s. They, too, conceded that many scholars have stated that this family is from Nubia, and our evaluation of the early mummies suggests the same. But most important, in 2004, a distinguished African-American anthropologist who is respected by all sides, Afrocentrists as well as Eurocentrists, concluded that the mummies of the 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th dynasties, this includes the Ramessoids and all of those, were all their greatest affiliation was with the people of Nubia. And he's not an Afrocentrist by any stretch of the imagination, though he's black. So what I'm saying is, the science, in quotes, that is being espoused to defend and support the reconstructed bust collides with the thinking of many other scientists who are experts in terms of the mummies themselves.
Right. Now, I mean, a lot of people have commented on Boy George's career haven't gone down, but to the degree that he's been mummified, I think this, you know, because there is a remarkable resemblance, I must say, to Boy George. But, you know, really seriously, the historic fact that at the time King Tut was alive, there were no known or documented conquests by Caucasian people, by white people in the area, really begs the question as to, you know, where did this come from? I mean, suddenly we have a situation where you have an era where the people at the time were of African descent in the region. You have all the history that backs that up, but yet you've got this bust put on display.
Well, see, that's consistent with the effort that began about 200 years ago, and several black scholars, Dr. Ben, Asa Hilliard, Renoka Rashidi, and Zingarata Bisha Heru, others who have created organizations and so forth to focus on this, point out that, especially during slavery, but even since then, of course, over the last 100 years, there has been the deliberate effort to remove black people from ancient Egypt, Egypt from Africa, and Africa from world history. It was rooted specifically during a time, and Du Bois talked about this, W.B. Du Bois, that Egyptology as a science arose during the Cotton Kingdom and the Sugar Empire. So here, the minds of the white scientists and scholars of the time were shackled by their perception of African people as inferior and subhuman by virtue of our having been enslaved at that time. Now, their discoveries in Kemet, Egypt, Kemet means the black land, the black nation, the black country, people of the black nation. Their discovery of this great civilization there was not consistent with what they knew of black people. So they began a systematic attempt to remove any hint of blackness from that civilization. Therefore, for example, though it's simply a matter of geography in terms of where Egypt is, the average scientist, even today in 2005, will refer to Egypt in the Middle East, the Near East, the Fertile Crescent, the Mediterranean, Western Asia, anywhere but Africa. And on the college and university campuses, Egypt, the subject of Egyptian history is found under Near Eastern or Middle Eastern studies as opposed to African studies. Now, at the same time that these historians were denying a pass to black people, legislators were saying that blacks were three-fifths of a man. Your religious leaders were claiming we were the cursed sons of Ham. And scientists were saying that black people were genetically inferior and subhuman. Now, the ordinary person, the ordinary American, the ordinary world citizen, assumes that when someone comes to you under the cloak of science, that they're objective. This is absolutely untrue. And our position is that scientists such as Zahi Hawass, the people at National Geographic and others, are still bedeviled by the misperception and racism that was rooted in the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries, saying that black people could not have laid the foundation of civilization or been affiliated with a civilization so grand because of their subhuman genetic status. And we're saying that in the 21st century, we're not going to tolerate that nonsense anymore.
Right. So, I mean, this is a lot bigger than just King Tut and whether or not he looked like Boy George or not. I mean, this really gets to the heart of a retelling of history and the kind of Eurocentrism of history that's been taught for, I mean, centuries now, it seems like. I mean, you can't have people who have built the pyramids, for example, be now considered inferior and, you know, not quite men and all of that used to really prop up the slave trade that built the empires of the West.
You know, that's absolutely true. And to show you how pervasive and malicious it is, between 1989 and around 2000, every major media forum in this nation attacked the incipient Afrocentric movement, and only one, Newsweek, gave any of the proponents of Afrocentrism an opportunity to present their point of view. Now, this is America, speaking of democracy and academia, and none of them allowed these scholars to present their point of view. If you're talking about abortion, if you're talking about the economy, if you're talking about politics, you present both sides. With this, no. And also, I want to show you, by way of an example, how this works. There was an exhibit entitled Pharaohs of the Sun in 2002 that was held at the Los Angeles County Museum also. And we attended and, of course, found the racism that I had not expected in 2002 but should have expected. In that, the depictions of Akhenaten and Nefertiti, and this was a renowned couple who were exceedingly Negroid in their characteristics. And the artists of the time, during the Amarna period of the 18th dynasty, had a field day depicting them. Overwhelmingly, around 90% of them depicted them as decidedly Negroid, what white scientists call pure Negroes, or the true Negroid features. A few depicted them with the features of what you'd call a Somali or an Ethiopian, which are the angular features. In the exhibit, the running commentary, both written and I also believe in terms of the audio tape, whenever the depiction showed them as decidedly Negroid, they would disavow the authenticity of them. They'd say, the commentary would say, well, this is unrestrained, it's an exaggeration, it's not real, on and on and on and on. Now, the ordinary person viewing those sculptures would say they were African by virtue of the features. A friend of mine happened to take her children and saw them, and she thought it was very nice. And as she was leaving the exhibit, a little white girl was walking out, and she walked over to the friends with whom she'd obviously come, and she said, you know what? The ancient Egyptians were black. And her friends responded, oh, no, they just looked black. Now, the reason they said that was because of the commentary, both written and oral, that had told them that. Were they left to their own logic system, by virtue of viewing the sculptures, they would have come to the conclusion that the little girl had reached. And what I'm saying to you is, these malicious scientists do this to deprive black people of the inspiration and of their achievements in antiquity by disclaiming their connection to this civilization, by claiming that it is white. And we find that unfair and wrong, and we're not going to tolerate it. In other words, the Boy George bust was the straw that broke the camel's back. We've been teaching within our own communities over the years, you've got to ignore this. You've got to ignore the Ten Commandments showing the Egyptians as white. You've got to ignore Cleopatra showing the Egyptians as white, on and on and on. This was the straw that broke the camel's back. We have gone national with this, saying this is preposterous. It perpetuates myths and misconceptions, and we're not going to tolerate it anymore.
Right. I mean, frankly speaking, I mean, the Ethiopians, I mean, whether or not the features are angular or not, clearly are also people of African descent and are African, you know, indeed. But just playing devil's advocate a bit here and now, what about those who are saying, well, you know, there's really an attempt to sort of glorify that period. I mean, whether or not King Tut or people in the pharaohs, many of them were of African descent, really covers over the fact that there was obviously a slave trade going on. I mean, people who built the pyramids, the kinds of conditions and is this something really to be proud of? I mean, or what is your comeback to that?
Well, first of all, modern evidence suggests that those who built the pyramids were involved in public works projects and were people who were employed and well taken care of. Secondly, it is true that there is an extolling of classical civilizations, but the reason for this is it's in self-defense. It's no less a focus than Western people focus on Greece and Rome and extol that and produce movies about it and so forth and so on and claim it as the seat of their civilization, though the anterior civilization of Nubia and Kush and Egypt most certainly laid the foundation of Greek and Roman civilization, according to the Greeks and Romans of the times who spoke to the issue. But what we say is this, that in a world and in a culture that constantly denigrates and besmirches people of African descent, we must break out of that by focusing on the, not only our greatness in antiquity, but how it directly impacted the very civilization about which people today prate so glibly, the Western one. Black people, black Africans, laid the foundation of Western civilization, according to the ancient eyewitnesses who saw what was going on at the time. Now, by virtue of having said that, this does not eliminate the fact that people engaged in excesses, that they were not all perfect, and so forth and so on. But given that everybody already knows that about Africa, because it's the only thing that's ever talked about. For example, have you ever seen a positive article in the Los Angeles Times about the continent of Africa? Probably not. Everybody already knows that. So we're saying that in light of your obsession with our deficiencies, let us now focus on our greatness. And I don't think that that can be exaggerated in light of the perception. I mean, in my own travels, people have a negative impression of black people. And it's because of white supremacy, one, and two, their lack of knowledge about their indebtedness to black people around the world. And it's so widespread. I mean, one example that I classically refer to is the fact that Africans were sailing to America thousands of years before Columbus.
Yet Right. Lucran, I'm afraid we are running very short of time,
problem.
But you are absolutely right, and I would hate for the segment to finish up without people knowing that Herodotus, who is considered, you know, the father of Greek civilization, and Greek civilization considered, you know, to be the father of the whole Eurocentric civilization, actually learned a lot of what he knew in Egypt with people of African descent, and he described Egyptians as being dark-skinned people with woolly hair. Well, that sounds like me.
That's
or
right.
You.
That's right. That's right. I would like to say before I go, too, that I have produced a film, a videotape entitled When Black Men Ruled the World. It may be obtained at Clegg.tv or 800-788-Clegg. Pythagoras, Herodotus, all of those people went to Egypt. They didn't go to Mesopotamia. They went to Egypt. They all pointed to Africa as the origin of civilization. And my message to Western historians and scientists is, get over it. We have contributed to civilization, and we're not going to tolerate this myth-making anymore.
Right, and LeGrand, I hope that you have some women in there when black men rule the world.
Well, of course. I have another one titled The Daughters of Isis, Black Women in Antiquity. But right. That sounded more lyrical.
Okay, we'll discuss that another time. Well, thank you so much for joining us, LeGrand Clay, Compton City Attorney.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Uprising. We are out of time. Uprising is produced by Sonali Kolhatkar with Leilani Albano, Kevin Trujillo Miller, Thatcher Collins, and Alan Minsky. Our engineer is Mark Maxwell. Find show information at uprisingradio.org and send comments and ideas to uprising@kpfk.org. Or you can call us at 818-985-2711, extension 515. You can order copies of this program at 1-800-735-0230 or www.pacificaarchives.org. I'm Margaret Prescott, sitting in today for Sonali Kolhatkar. Tune in tomorrow at 8 a.m. for another edition of Uprising here on KPFK.